Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Kicking with Kiro here on Full Press Radio, episode number 117. Thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, once again on a Saturday morning, the last Saturday in November. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. I know I sure did. A lot of football, a lot of great sporting events yesterday on Black Friday. I mean, that creates a turn fun of itself. Good college football, great college basketball game last night that we're going to talk about toward the end of the show. Baseball spending that we're going to get into. Of course, we're going to recap the three Thanksgiving games. One very eventful, another one eventful but ugly, and then one you just wanted to avoid and go right to sleep. We'll look at the Sunday's action, of course, word association, top five games. We'll do top five games of today's college action, including, of course, you'll probably be hearing this as you're watching the early portions of Ohio State, Michigan, but we're going to get into that in a little bit. And the importance of that game, obviously, it's huge. Bedlam later tonight. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State's a big game as the playoff picture shakes up and starts to get a little clearer. Cincinnati helped itself yesterday, of course. We'll get into that. As I said earlier, college basketball game last night. We'll look ahead to Tuesday in the NBA. Golden State against Phoenix. Phoenix has won 15 straight. Can they make it 16? Suns have been probably the best team in the NBA, I think, to this point. And the Mets doing some Black Friday spending before the lockout is supposed to hit in baseball on Wednesday. What does it mean, and how can it help the Mets going forward as they flex their financial muscle? And we'll talk about the match, which was interesting. I like the difference this time. We're going to get into that a little bit. I want to remind you, you can tweet me on Twitter at RickNator555. It's at R-E-C-K, letter I, Nader, like in Terminator 3-5s. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at FP_coverage, at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, wherever it's your podcast. Just search Kicking with Keeler. Chances are you'll find it against Kicking It with Keeler on iTunes or any of your podcast platforms. And I want to hear from you. Tell me what you like, what you don't like. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. Remember to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It is free. All of our articles are there. All of our podcasts are there. So be sure to check that out. So as I said, we'll start with the three Thanksgiving games. We'll work our way forward. I'll do the top five games in this segment, and then we'll do word association coming up after our first commercial break. So let's get into the games and start. We'll get the Detroit game out of the way. One game that was just it was a close game, but ugly at the same time. The Bears do find a way to win, so the Lions stay winless. In Detroit, Jared Goff had his best game of the season, 21 of 25, 171, two touchdowns. Problem for the Lions is they couldn't get upfield at the end of the game. Bears go on an 18-play drive. Dan Campbell calls a timeout after his coach, one of his assistant coaches called a timeout. That's against the rules, leads to a first down for the Bears. They run out the clock, and there's at least some things you're seeing on both sides for Chicago and Detroit. For Chicago, even though you don't have Justin Fields in this game, you're seeing the emergence of Darnell Mooney in this offense. Without Allen Robinson, he's become the number one there, and I think established himself pretty well. Andy Dalton had a decent game, 24-39, 317, a touchdown and a pick. Got the ball downfield when he needed to. Lions were awful defending the downfield pass. Cole Kmet, emerging as a good tight end for them. 8 catches, 65 yards for the rookie out of Notre Dame. And I think when you look at the Lions, which I still think they have one more legitimate chance at a win. Now, they could surprise everybody and win one of these next six. Their next legitimate shot, I think, is December 26th in Atlanta. But they're still fighting hard for Dan Campbell. And a lot of people feel awful for the Lions because they're 0-10-1. But when you look at their slate, I know the Niner game was a little bit misleading because the Niners dominated that game, only won by 8. But a lot of these games for the Lions are like by 10 points or less. Outside of a couple, like the Eagle blowout, the Bengals blew out in the second half. The other one being the Packer game, which Detroit led the half. So it's not as if Detroit is getting thoroughly outplayed. And again, this is not Dan Campbell's fault in Detroit. They built an awful roster. DeAndre Swift gets hurt during the game. You have a bridge quarterback in Jared Goff. T.J. Hockenson, of course, is the foundational piece in terms of pass catchers, but they don't really have another guy that you would say, that's my future wide receiver. And the defense doesn't really have a lot of household names on it. So with that being the case, how is Dan Campbell supposed to get anything out of this roster? And you could argue he's gotten the most out of this roster, and they still don't have a win. Like, that's the weird part of this, where normally if a team is 0-16, or could go 0-16, or 0-17, or in Detroit's case, 0-16-1, you'd look to get rid of the coach. But in Dan Campbell's first year, you could tell they've adopted his mentality. They're just getting unlucky. And it makes you think they're going to get a win at some point. So when you look at that schedule, outside of maybe Atlanta, Seattle in January, even though the game is in Seattle, but the Seahawks could really just be looking to go home. I mean, their season's been awful. But it could also be, I believe that's Seattle's last home game. It could be Russ's last home game, potentially. So that also plays a wrinkle into things as well. Bears keep themselves fractionally alive in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to get in the playoffs, though. But still, Chicago avoids embarrassment on Thanksgiving. Last Lions win, by the way, I saw on the Fox telecast, was December 2020 against the Bears. Like, can we still get Bears-Lions out of Thanksgiving? I said that the other day. Can we get that off the screen? We'll find out. Let's do the nightcap, and then we'll talk about Dallas. Bills roll over the Saints 31-6. And this game was... should not have been close at all. You look at the Saints right now. Taysom Hill was an emergency backup because of his injuries. And Trevor Siemian can't cut it. I thought when Siemian was the quarterback, when he first took over for Jameis Winston due to the torn ACL, he could at least be suitable. He's not. And largely, Sean Payton can only coach so much on this roster. No Alvin Kamara. No Mark Ingram. Sounds like Deontay Harris is going to get hit with a 3-game suspension. So they're really going to lack their top wide receiver. No Michael Thomas. Ryan Ramczyk was out. And their two running backs, Kamara and Ingram, were out. So how are the Saints supposed to do anything offensively when your leading receiver is little Jordan Humphrey? You don't have a tight end. Adam Trautman's hurt. So New Orleans has literally nothing offensively. And Sean Payton tried to go for it on fourth down a couple times. He tried to be creative. But when you don't have the personnel, it doesn't matter what you draw up. And the Saints don't have the personnel. And they were one of those teams, they beat Tampa Bay and it looked like they were going to make a run. And look at the Saints' schedule. I mean, look at how many wins they could get coming up. I mean, maybe the Jet game. Maybe the game at Atlanta end of the season. Maybe Miami. That's maybe 3 wins out of their final 7, final 6. So they'll be lucky to get to 8 wins after what looked to be a promising season after they won 3 straight and then just the sky's falling for them, and it's a tough one. For the Bills, they didn't look ahead, and that's a good thing, especially after the embarrassment they took to the Colts 2 days ago. Josh Allen threw 2 ugly interceptions in the first half. Bills only led 10-0 in a game that they dominated at halftime. Now, they figured it out the second half. Really strong drives. Touchdown to start the second. They scored a touchdown on 3 of their first four drives in the second half. Josh Allen hits Stephon Diggs with 7 catches in this game. Diggs 7 for 74 and a score. You're still not seeing Buffalo be able to run the football. And I keep saying with the Bills... well, they did run for 113 yards. The best rusher, Devin Singletary, had 44 yards. If you're going to win December and January, you have to be able to run the ball. There's just one of those things where, like, yes, the game is about passing, but you have to be able to establish an identity. And that leads to a big game 9 days from now, Monday Night Football, December 6th, Bills at the Patriots. Bills at home to New England. Which, in my mind, when you look at these two teams playing twice in the next 4 weeks, or 3 weeks, essentially. No, it's 4, yeah. Twice in the next 3. After Sunday. It's about Buffalo needing this game at home. If the two teams split at home, then it creates a really fun, interesting dynamic for the rest of the way. But if you're Bill Belichick, can you game plan to make Josh Allen strictly a passing quarterback? I was watching... Hard Knocks, the Colts one. It was actually pretty good through 2 episodes. And they were all the talk about Josh Allen was keeping him in the well, keeping him in the pocket. The Saints try to do that, but Josh Allen, I thought, did a good job, particularly on third down. Bills were 8 for 13. If you count the 1 fourth down they made, they were 9 for 14 on third down or later. I mean, that's going to win games, average almost 6 yards a play. They didn't really make outside of, they made the two mistakes on the interceptions, but only four penalties. So the Bills did their job, held the Saints 290 yards of offense. The big injury for the Bills, though, is the injury to Tre'Davious White, their top cornerback. Bills absolutely need him. And you look at this defense, Sean McDermott's got a good group, but White is one of the best corners out there. So missing him for an extended period of time is huge for this Buffalo team. And finally in Dallas, where I think, I don't know if it was a surprise that Vegas won it in overtime. And tip your cap to Derek Carr, who played a really good game, 373 yards, had the touchdown, led Vegas down the field. They got off to the great start with the 50-plus yard touchdown to DeSean Jackson, who had a good game. And to lose Darren, but what's surprising for Vegas, to lose Darren Waller early in that game and still find a way to win, keep yourself alive in the AFC playoff picture, that's big. And they got a good performance from Josh Jacobs. 22 carries, 87 yards. He had a touchdown. Strong effort. Now, here's the problem for Dallas. And in some ways, you can excuse the Cowboys. No Amari Cooper. No CeeDee Lamb. Ezekiel Elliott's clearly banged up, and the news on Friday was they were going to try to get Elliott some time off, meaning I don't think you'll see him play Thursday against the Saints. But they have Tony Pollard, and Tony Pollard has kind of emerged as a 1A running back almost, and is at least catching the ball. Four catches, 32 yards out of the backfield. He had 36 yards on 10 carries, but Dallas couldn't really run the football against Vegas, just 20 carries for 64 yards. And that limits what Dak Prescott could do. And Dak played a good game. 32 of 47, 375, two touchdowns. Not a bad effort without your top two guys. And he let him down the field to tie the game with a Dalton Schultz touchdown at about 2:54 to go. Remember, Vegas led 24-13 in the third quarter before the Pollard kickoff return. So Vegas was in control of this game pretty much from the onset. Then you had the dueling field goals at the end. Vegas gets the 56-yarder by Carlson. Dallas then gets down the field. Zuerlein hits a 45-yarder. And then you had the issue of penalties. A lot of people have been very critical of Sean Hockley's crew and all the penalties they called. There was a combined 28 penalties for 276 yards. You can blame the officiating for being in the spotlight on Thanksgiving, but one thing you can't blame is both teams had 14 penalties. And when that happens, it's not about one team's being favored. It's more just there's a lot of sloppy play. And one play I can look back on is the 3rd-and-18 in overtime. Parsons gets the sack on Carr. Dallas crowd's going nuts. Looks like the Cowboys are going to get the ball back to at least either keep it a tie game, which would have ended in a tie because it's about 5 minutes to go in overtime, or drive for the win. And Anthony Brown commits a pass interference, which is the last thing you could do on a 3rd-and-18. That's just bad football IQ. On 3rd-and-long, in that situation, you cannot commit a defensive penalty. But Dallas did, and Brown had, I think, 4 pass interferences in the game. You can't win that way. If you want to win in the NFC, and the NFC is tough, especially these 4 teams and then the Cowboys, you cannot commit mistakes like that against the Matt Staffords, the Tom Bradys, Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray's. You cannot make mistakes like that if you want to win. You have all the talent in the world, and Dallas is a very talented football team. They're going to get healthier, which is why I don't think I'd overreact to this game, because Vegas has been one of the tougher teams all year in terms of what they've gone through off on the field and off the field. To find a way to still be in the playoff mix is a pretty good year for them. But for the Cowboys, got to close out these games. Got to find a way. And they didn't do it. I won't be as hard on them as Stephen A. Smith is. I won't revel in their losses as Stephen A. Smith does either. They're still the favorite in the NFC East, although if Philadelphia beats the Giants, they're a game back. Game and a half back in the division. And remember, these two teams play in Philadelphia to end the year. So very quietly, the Eagles creeping up there. And Dallas' schedule is pretty favorable the rest of the way. The only tough team they play in the next month is really Arizona. They get the Saints Thursday, then Washington on the road, who's playing better. They're getting healthier, too. Curtis Samuel and Logan Thomas could be back on Monday. That will help that offense. Giants, Washington again, Arizona, Philly to end the year. Not cupcake games, but games Dallas should win. I think they'll be okay, but that's a game, again, I can understand why fans be frustrated. So I'll give you my top five games for Week 12 in the NFL. And you look at Week 12, it is a very fun slate. A lot of games with playoff meaning, a lot of games could be eliminator games in some cases. Not such eliminators, but you look at head-to-head tiebreakers starting to matter, and that's what creates kind of this fun vibe we got going here. So let's start at number five. And number five, I'm going to go to Baltimore. Sunday Night Football, Browns at the Ravens. Sounds like Kareem Hunt could play for the Browns and running back to help Nick Chubb. This is a must-win for Cleveland. All that Baker Mayfield's gone through, they beat the Lions last week, and it feels like they lost. Baker's talking about the fans through the media. Ravens should get Lamar Jackson back. Ravens and Browns play twice in the next 3 weeks, so this is a very fun divisional matchup. Must win for Cleveland. Baltimore knows if they win and New England beats Tennessee, they're the one seed in the AFC. A lot of stuff riding on this game. That's number five. Number four, sneaky good game in San Francisco. It's the 4:30 game on Fox. Vikings at the 49ers. And why is this a sneaky game? Both teams are 5-5. When you look at the NFC right now, we did the playoff picture on Thursday. Minnesota and San Francisco are the 6 and 7 seeds, respectively. The winner would be the 6th seed in the NFC if the season ended on Sunday and have the head-to-head tiebreaker. And when you have two teams of 5-5 in the NFC and three teams of 5-6, and again, I think New Orleans is going to fade. So let's look at maybe Philly, Carolina, Washington could get to 5-6 with a win. Head-to-head wins start to matter. Niners are playing great as of late, starting to establish their own identity. Vikings are winning close games, including the win over Green Bay last week. Can they get over that hangover to go on the road and get a win? So a good matchup of even teams in this one. Number three, I'm going to go to Indianapolis. Buccaneers at the Colts. Buccaneers offense getting back on track against the Giants on Monday. Still no Antonio Brown for Tampa. Maybe one more week for him. Colts coming off the blowout win over Buffalo, and you've got a good matchup of contrasting styles. Tom Brady and the Bucs offense against a really good Indianapolis defense. And you have Jonathan Taylor, who's been, in my opinion, the MVP of the league, against one of the best run defenses in the NFL. So which style ends up prevailing is going to be the fun part of this matchup. But Indianapolis fighting for a playoff spot in Tampa, trying to get that number one seed of the NFC. Number two, we're going to New England. Titans and the Patriots. Huge game for both teams. Tennessee's coming in banged up. A.J. Brown out. Number one wide receiver for Tennessee. Remember, no Julio Jones. No Jeremy McNichols, so they're down another running back. Adrian Peterson got waived earlier in the week. They're without two linebackers. They're without a defensive lineman. They're without their guard. And as good of a coach as Mike Vrabel is, and Vrabel beat Belichick the last couple of times they played, does Tennessee have anything left to beat a Patriot team that's won 5 in a row, that is clicking, that's had 10 days to prep for this game, and has one of the better defenses in the NFL? Because think about it. If you're the Patriots, who do you game plan to stop on Tennessee if nobody left? Really, you're game planning to contain Ryan Tannehill. And the Patriots, we said about the Ravens scenario, if the Patriots win, Cleveland beats Baltimore. When New England was 2-4, and I would have told you the Patriots would have a chance to be the number one seed in the AFC with 5 weeks left, you'd find me crazy. But that's the situation we're in. And finally, number one, go to Lambeau. Rams at the Packers. Rams are actually favored in Lambeau. That's a shocker. Aaron Rodgers, of course, been dealing with that toe issue, which he likes to show off his feet to the media, apparently. This is a Ram team, though, that's never lost 3 straight under Sean McVay, trying to find their identity off the bye week. Packers team reeling after that tough loss in Minnesota, but I don't think they're reeling offensively. They're reeling defensively. That was a really inconsistent game from their defense. Matt Stafford against Aaron Rodgers to get your NFC North battle in this one. Could see Aaron Jones back for Green Bay, and that would be huge if he's back in the lineup. And right now, I just tend to trust the Packers a little bit more than I trust the Rams. And it's not as if that McVay and the Rams can't win this game, but I need to see the Rams go away from what they normally do for me to think they're going to go on the road in a cold game in late November and win game in outdoors. Because that's a true test for Sean McVay offense. Because if the Rams don't win the division, they could be making some trips to Green Bay in cold weather. But luckily for them in the NFC, I mean, Arizona's a warm weather place. Tampa's a warm weather place. Dallas is in a dome. There's not really, if the Rams, even though they're the 5 seed, they're not going anywhere cold. This is the only place they go if it's cold. And if they could beat Green Bay on the road, that'll help their confidence going into January. So coming up next, we will play Week 12 Word Association. There are other couple games that we could have got onto this with this list, and I will break those games down a little bit more. Coming up next here on Kicking with Keel on this last Saturday of November, episode 117. Word Association Week 12 in the NFL about to take place here on Kicking with Keel. Ricky Keel here with you once again. And, of course, how we play Word Association, we did a little bit on Thanksgiving. If you're new to the show, well, welcome. I throw out each NFL game of the week. We give the first word or phrase that pops in our head. We're supposed to have a guest this week. Didn't work out. Hopefully have one for you next week for the first Sunday in December, which makes for a lot of fun. So let us start in Cincinnati. Steelers at the Bengals. Big game. I think this was number six for me if I did a six top six games because I love the matchup for this. And my word for this is rock fight. Because you look at this matchup, Cincinnati beat Pittsburgh earlier in the season. Bengals got 30 carries from Joe Mixon last week against Vegas. But Pittsburgh really, I think, has to feel some good things in that Charger game. They're going to get healthier on defense. Minkah Fitzpatrick will be back. We'll see what happens with T.J. Watt and Joe Hayden. But the Steelers, I think, have to realize you look back at that Week 2 game and it was really just a lot of mistakes. Week 3 game against Cincinnati. A lot of those were mistakes. Ben threw two picks, had to throw the ball almost 60 times. I mean, they need Najee Harris to have a much better game than he did a week ago. But it's a good matchup of running backs here with Mixon and Harris. Bengals with a chance for a sweep. And if it all breaks well for the Bengals, they could be back in first place in the AFC North. So AFC North rock fight is going to be the one here. Tampa at Indy. We just talked about that one in the top five. My word for this, I'm going to stick with the theme. It's contrasting styles. People say styles make great fights. You have a Bucs rush defense against the best running back in football. You have Tom Brady in this really good offense against a really good Colts defense. What gives? And can Carson Wentz actually not make big mistakes? He's done a good job avoiding mistakes all year, 3 interceptions. Of course, one of those 3 is that bad one against the Titans, but he also has 5 fewer picks than Tom Brady, albeit when you look at Brady's 8 picks, a lot of them are drops and balls off receivers' hands, so should be a fun matchup in Lucas Oil Stadium. Carolina at Miami. My word for this is surging. Both these teams are playing some good football. Carolina, though, had the tough loss last week against the Washington football team, but you're starting to see signs of life in the offense. Cam Newton, 21 of 27, 189, 2 touchdowns in the loss last week. Christian McCaffrey touched the ball 17 times for a combined 109 yards and a touchdown. You're starting to see Carolina what happens when you get good quarterback play. DJ Moore's playing better. Robbie Anderson's playing better. McCaffrey's more involved. Cam's going to get some good plays running the football. So at least from an offensive perspective, not exactly a win streak, Carolina is surging. Miami also is surging. They've won 3 in a row. Very quietly, Tua is playing much better. Especially after coming back from the injury against the Ravens. Last couple games have been good for him. And you look at Miami. We said Panthers, Giants, Jets next 3 weeks. Chance to go 7-7 with 3 weeks to go. After their awful start to the year, they'd absolutely sign up for that. So a fun game in South Beach. To New England. Titans at the Patriots. We talked about that. That's our number 2 game of the week. And my word is what's left. Tennessee's a good team. They're going to show a much better effort than they did against the Texans. But they don't have anything offensively. When you don't have Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and you need to go to Gillette to win a football game, and I try not to get overconfident in these kind of games, but I just don't see, unless Tennessee's defense can force some turnovers from Mac Jones, get some short fields, I think New England's going to win this game. I think it won't be close. Patriots, actually, that line went up to 7. just not the right circumstances breaking for Tennessee. But, we mentioned it, the coaching edge that Rabel lately has had on Belichick is something to watch here. You could see some trick stuff from Rabel in this game. I would not be surprised. To MetLife Stadium, the Eagles at the Giants. And my word for this, it hurts, but we've got to judge. Jalen Hurts has been fantastic. Eagles are starting to run the football. Starting to establish their identity after we were begging Nick Sirianni to run the ball earlier in the year. They dominated the Saints last week. Their schedule gets a lot favorable the rest of the way. And why I say we got to judge, we're going to have to judge the Giants going forward. Jason Garrett no longer the OC. Do we see changes in this offense? Even though Kadarius Toney is doubtful in this game, the Giants have not used their wide receivers well when they are healthy. What does Freddie Kitchens do as the opposite play caller? And Joe Judge is starting to run out of guys they can fire before the buck stops with him. And yes, it would be 2 years, and I get that. They fired McAdoo after 2 years. They fired Shermer after 2 years. But if the Giants get a new GM in place, they can't limit their pool of GMs to who wants to keep Joe Judge, because you're not going to get the best candidate that way. So unless the Giants rebound to end the season in their final six games, is it worth keeping Joe Judge around? A guy I like, but a guy who's starting to sound like Belichick, but starts to kind of needs to win games to kind of keep that seriousness going in that locker room. To Jacksonville, the Falcons at 4-6 against the 2-8 Jags. And my word for this is it's sunny in Florida, because I actually like Jacksonville in this football game. Atlanta's favored by 2, but the Falcons are coming off an awful loss against New England. Now, they've also had 10 days, but the Falcons' offense has scored 3 points in the last 2 games. They missed Calvin Ridley. It sounds, I think Cordell Patterson's supposed to play in this game. He's dealing with the ankle injury. We'll see if he does. But if he doesn't, remember, you don't have Patterson then. You don't have Ridley. And Jacksonville, you look at this team, competitive last, competitive against the Colts a couple weeks ago. They lost 23-17. Jaguars had their bye last week. Actually, not their bye last week. They lost to San Francisco. Albeit they got blown out 30-10, but this is the kind of game Trevor Lawrence against his Falcons defense. You're at home, find a way to win. You don't get a lot of opportunities where a win is in the cards for Jacksonville, but I just don't trust the Falcons right now. To Houston, the Jets and the Texans. And yep, you guessed it. It is our flip the channel game of the week. And maybe Atlanta-Jacksonville should, but only because Zach Wilson is going to return for the Jets, and you want to see if after Mike White and Josh Johnson and Joe Flacco had some success in this offense, if Zach Wilson can with Elijah Moore and company. Texans, though, needed 4 picks just to score 22 points against the Titans. Even though they did win, give credit to Tyrod Taylor. But when you got 2 really bad teams facing each other, you don't want to stay away from this game entirely, especially with the 1 o'clock slate being as good as it is with a lot of meaningful games in it. Stay away from this game. To Denver, the Chargers at the Broncos. My word for this is AFC West eliminator. Especially for Denver. After Vegas beating Dallas, this essentially becomes a must-win for the Broncos. Trying to get to 6-5. And you look at the AFC, 6-5 is kind of the magic number right now, where if Denver wins and Chargers lose, you would have, at that point, well, you don't know what. Right now, it's 6-5. You got Indy at 6-5, Vegas 6-5, Cleveland 6-5. Obviously, this will change as Charger Bronco game going on, because Indy will be in progress and Vegas has already played. Pittsburgh, of course, has the tie. But when you have these games at home, especially in the division, if you're Denver, you've got to find a way to win them. They get Kansas City at home to end the season. Broncos and Chargers play twice in the final 6 games. These games are usually close. And they're actually a lot of fun to watch. Remember, there was the game like last year, 2 years ago, where Drew Lock led Denver down the field to win. Both these teams have done a decent job this season, but really it's a must-win for Vic Fangio. Got to find a way to win a close game at home in the division. We'll see if he does. To Green Bay, the Rams at the Packers. Number 1 game of the week. And my word for this is passing is cool, but we need backs. People are going to focus on the Stafford-Rodgers matchup of this, as you should. But I mentioned it earlier. Rams need to get back to running the ball somewhat with Henderson and Michelle. You can't just keep relying on Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham trying to find his way in this offense for it to be any good. And for Green Bay, Aaron Jones may be on the way back. A.J. Dillon. If Aaron Rodgers' toe is bothering him that much, then you got to use more of the running game. So while passing is going to be cool in this game, especially in this Lambeau-like weather where it tend to be really cold, 35 degrees at kickoff, not as cold as usually it is, but in late November, but it could get colder, find a way to run the football and control the game from that aspect, dominate in the trenches. What does this Packers offensive line do? It's battled injuries against this Rams defensive line. There's different fights here, but the Rams, again, you want to see them get back to basics, and hopefully over the bye they figured that out. To San Francisco, Vikings and 49ers, and the word for this is crunch time, because you look at the Vikings, last 2 weeks, the Charger game and the Packer game, they're finding ways to win in the close ones. And Kirk Cousins done a much better job compared to later in the season. Kirk Cousins had a really good year. It's really been the Vikings defense that really loses these late games. But for the Niners, they're starting to find what they're good at. Jimmy Garoppolo with 2 touchdowns, those only about 20-25 times. Debo Samuel's been more of a factor in the run game. Remember, the Niners ran it for 171 yards last week, and they didn't have Elijah Mitchell. So this is a Niners team that can run the football. This is Dalvin Cook with the Vikings who can run the football. Fun matchup here. And who delivers in the crunch time, because this game, I think, will come down to the last possession, determines who wins. The other AFC North game, of course, Sunday night football game, Browns at the Ravens. This is another one of those fun matchups. And my word for this is Lamar on the rise, meaning you've got Lamar Jackson. I think he's going to play in this game. Did not play with the non-COVID illness last week. Browns have played Baltimore tough. You go back to last year with the Justin Tucker field goal with 2 seconds left in Cleveland. But for the Ravens to win last week without their starting quarterback, their defense played well. And you wonder just where this Browns offense is at. I know they're going to get their Jack Conklin back to tackle, and they're going to get Kareem Hunt back this week. They're going to start to get more whole, which is a good sign. But, and I've said this about Baker Mayfield, how much of his struggles are really just strictly injury-related? I'm not sure. I'm more of a Baker Mayfield fan than a lot of people are. I think he can succeed in the Browns offense. But at some point, what I'm interested in this game is if Baltimore gets ahead early, gets a 10-17-point lead, does Stefanski just go to Keenan to save the season? Cleveland ends the year, like I said, 2 with the Ravens. They still play the Bengals, even though they beat Cincinnati earlier this year. They still have a game in Pittsburgh. So a lot of the division is in front of them. Besides those divisional games, they have Vegas and Green Bay. One of the tougher schedules in the NFL. So if you want to get to the playoffs and Baker's struggling and you're down 2 scores in this game, if you think about Keenum, that's how you save your year. But for Cleveland, it's going to be about trying to run the ball. For the Ravens, trying to ease Lamar Jackson back into things. And Monday Night Football in Washington. Seahawks at the football team. And my word for this is, I'm trying to think. Actually, this is a tough one here. That's not the word, but you got a decent matchup. I think it. You know what? I'm going to go close game. I think I'm going to keep it a close game. The line's even. And probably toss up is another one. I mean, Taylor Heineke is playing a lot better. Washington coming off the win at Carolina last week. Heineke threw for 206 and 3 touchdowns. Didn't turn the football over. He hasn't thrown a pick in the last 2 games. And this is Seattle team that I just don't know what they are anymore. And Russell Wilson has not thrown a touchdown since coming back from injury. They don't have a great running game. And Washington, even though without Chase Young, found a way to win at Carolina, a tough place to play. So if you're looking to pick this game on who's going in the right direction, the football team right now is, and a win for them, they get to 5-6, and all of a sudden their season's right in front of them because they do get Vegas next week, but then they play strictly division games the last 5 games of the year. Now, it doesn't mean they'll win the division. No. They still have 2 at Dallas. That doesn't help them, but the football team starting to play pretty well. Chance to win 3 in a row. Get to 5-6 after their season looked lost. So, A lot to look forward to for them. So that is Week 12 Word Association. Thanks to all those who, of course, are tuning in to listen to it. If you have a word or phrase for your team's favorite, your favorite team's matchup in Week 13, I want to hear from you. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com, or email me, or tweet me, at rickinator555. Coming up next, it's college football. Top 5 games of Week 12, the last weekend of the Week 13, the last weekend of the regular season. And the last week before conference championship week. And, of course, we'll recap what happened on an eventful Black Friday in college football. You're listening to Kicking with Keeler on Full Press Radio. We'll be right back going to the college gridiron after this. Week 13 in college football this afternoon. Last weekend before the conference championship games next week. And it creates for a lot of fun. But, of course, before we look at our top five games for today, let's look back at what's happened over the last 48 hours. And we'll start on Thanksgiving. Ole Miss completes a 10-win season, 31-21 in the Egg Bowl of Mississippi State. This game was uglier than people expected. It was rainy. It was cold. Will Rogers threw the ball 58 times. It was 38-58 for a touchdown. But the key was Matt Corral. Matt Corral threw for 234, a touchdown and a pick. But he ran for 12 times, 45 yards and 2 touchdowns. Snoop Connor ran for 2 scores for the Rebels. And for Ole Miss to win 10 games, a great year for Lane Kiffin. Great year for Corral, who was in the Heisman race the bulk of the year. I don't think he's going to win it, but he's been proven to be one of the more dynamic quarterbacks in college football. Whatever bowl game Ole Miss plays is going to be watched by college fans and NFL fans alike. So I think he's a real interesting NFL draft prospect going into next year. But what a year for Lane Kiffin. If it looks like Ole Miss is going to get into a New Year's Six Bowl, especially ranked in the top 10 in the college football playoff rankings, so they will get a chance to play in a significant bowl game. And really the only two losses, one was to Alabama, which you can't blame them for losing, and the other was against Auburn, when Auburn had Bo Nix healthy. So not a bad year, and good job by Lane Kiffin. And of course, I think he'll be, again, courted for a lot of jobs. Florida. We'll see. We talked about the Miami rumors a couple weeks ago. Manny Diaz has done a much better job at Miami, but Kiffin will be in the spotlight again over the winter. And then yesterday, Cincinnati, one win away from likely a trip to the playoff. And they dominated against East Carolina, 35-13, 21 points in the second quarter, including 2 Desmond Ridder touchdowns. Cincinnati also had a blocked field goal for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. East Carolina, the problem for them was their red zone scoring. They just could not get anything going in the red zone. Pirates had 282 yards of total offense. They're 5 for 18 on third down. Turned it over twice. So Cincinnati's defense doing a really good job. And I think one of the things the committee was looking from the Bearcats is don't make these games interesting. The game was never in doubt. So Cincinnati will play Houston next week. Houston should stay ranked by the committee. And as long as Cincinnati wins, there is at least a path for them to the playoff. I think they would probably get in. I can't say definite, but it's really interesting. We're really close to getting a group of five team into the playoff. I think the last time we were this close was, remember Boise State played Nevada and Boise State missed a chip shot field goal? That was when Colin Kaepernick was at Nevada. That's how far back you have to go where a group of five or a non-power five school was this close to either making the BCS National Championship or the playoff. It's eventful. Cincinnati pulls it off. It's eventful. So I don't think a lot of people thought we'd get to this point. And NC State, what a win last night in the battle for North Carolina. Tar Heels led 30-21 with 2:12 left. Devin Leary completes a 64-yard touchdown. Then an onside kick recovery. Then 2 North Carolina roughing the passer penalties. And leads to a 24-yard touchdown. NC State wins the game 34-30. And now as long as Wake Forest, if they lose to Boston College today, NC State's going to the ACC Championship. So a good year for the Wolfpack regardless. They go 9-3. Now they wait to see if they will play Pitt next week in Charlotte. And on one more note from Friday, Mountain West matchup, San Diego State, 27-16 over Boise State. Boise State got out to a 16-3 lead midway through the second. Hank Bachmeier had 2 touchdown passes, and then the Aztecs kicked it in high gear, scoring the last 24 points of the game. San Diego State is 11-1. They will play in the Mountain West Championship game next week against Utah State. That game is actually on Fox, by the way, at 3 o'clock Eastern time. And remember, next week, when we do the conference championship games, I think since there's not that much more than five, we will rank them on how you were watching, pretty much. The only thing we will not be able to recap, we will actually preview the Pac-12 championship more on Thursday's show. Pac-12 championship game is Friday on ABC. So we'll talk about that game more, which looks like as long as Oregon beats Oregon State today, it'll be a rematch of Oregon against Utah. So here we go. Top five games for this afternoon. It's a really interesting slate. Not a lot of marquee games, but there's some good games in here. So number five, I'm going to go to East Lansing here. Michigan State at home against Penn State. Michigan State trying to rebound after an awful loss at Ohio State last week. Their playoff chances coming to an end. Their Big Ten championship coming to an end. How do they respond? Can Kenneth Walker have one more big game? He's got almost 1,500 yards, 17 touchdowns. Can he get to 20 potentially for the year before the bowl game? That'd be huge for him. For Penn State, James Franklin gets that 10-year extension. Penn State 7-4, but you ask Penn State fans all around, not really a happy 7-4. And it's also one of those interesting rivalry games. So that puts this for me at number five for today. Number four, we're going to Eugene, Oregon State at Oregon. Oregon State's having a surprisingly decent year at 7-4. Oregon coming off that tough loss to Utah, got the Civil War game. And one player on a watch for Oregon State here is their running back, B.J. Baylor. He had 150 yards against Arizona State last week. Baylor's had three touchdowns in the last five games. He's rushed for at least 80 yards in four of his last five, so he's one of those underrated running backs. The key today for Oregon State is going to be their sophomore quarterback, Chance Nolan. Nolan's not a guy who's going to throw the ball a ton, just 18 attempts last week against the Sun Devils. Nolan, by the way, though, has thrown two touchdowns in three of his last five games, but he only threw for 90 yards last week. He's going to need a lot more than that today. And on the road, he has struggled this year. Seven picks in Oregon State's road games. But this is still a really interesting rivalry. Oregon, how do they get off the mat? You could throw the Paul Bunyan game in this, Wisconsin-Minnesota, but Wisconsin, chance to go to the Big Ten championship game. But Minnesota is one of those teams. I'll be interested in that one, too. Number three, let's go to the Iron Bowl, Alabama at Auburn. Now, the interesting test here is Alabama's had some of their tougher games on the road this year. I mean, they've not cut out a lot of consistency. Now, for Auburn, different quarterback here. T.J. Finley has only made one start because Bo Nix is out for the year. 463 yards, three touchdowns, no picks in that start. How does he handle his first Iron Bowl? Bryce Young, of course, was great last week, over 500 yards against Arkansas, but can this Alabama defense play dominant for 60 minutes? Georgia's ahead next week, but Alabama knows they win this game, everything's in front of them. But the Iron Bowl always has a way of providing some weird twists and turns. Not last year, because Alabama dominated last year. Remember, Nick Saban missed that game due to COVID. This game always finds a way to... Sometimes when you least expect it, it's more fun than you think. So that's my number three game for today. Number two, got to be Bedlam. Oklahoma State, later tonight, 7:30 Eastern, ABC. Mike Gundy, 2-14 as Oklahoma State head coach against Oklahoma. And this one is the Cowboys defense with Jim Knowles, defensive coordinator. They are fantastic at getting after the quarterback. They've dominated these games, and Oklahoma, to me, can't really stop the run, and that's where Jalen Warren comes in. Warren had a rough game last week, 12 carries, 37 yards against Texas Tech. Oklahoma State won the game, so it didn't really matter. And Warren is one of those guys that I think can create a big impact here. But what you want to see, we talked about contrasting styles in the NFL with that Bucs-Colts game. You have that here. You have Caleb Williams in a dynamic Oklahoma offense, or at least an offense that can make plays, because Caleb Williams always creates something out of nothing, against a strong, elite Oklahoma State defense. Oklahoma State's in the Big 12 championship game already. Oklahoma needs to win or needs to be able to lose to Texas Tech earlier today to get to the Big 12 championship next week. These two teams could play twice. I think that could only hurt Oklahoma State more than help them, because it's tough to beat a team 2 weeks in a row. But this is a must-win for Oklahoma State to any shot at the playoff. Oklahoma is an outside shot, But I don't think Oklahoma's dominated enough unless they just wipe the floor with Oklahoma State, then maybe they get back in the conversation. But I think a one-loss Oklahoma still is not going to make the playoff. But the only way we'll find out is if they win and put that test to the committee. And number one, of course it's the big game. Noon Eastern. If you're listening to this and probably watching it already on Fox with Gus Johnson, Joel Klatt, and Jenny Taft, Ohio State and Michigan. Can Jim Harbaugh finally beat Ohio State? And he's got the team to do it. He's got a quarterback in Cade McNamara who's been very efficient. 2 interceptions this year, 14 touchdowns. Hassan Haskins with 13 touchdowns on the ground, over 1,000 yards. Haskins with 5 touchdowns in his last 5 games, had 2 last week against Maryland. This is the Michigan team that can control the clock, and they can get after the quarterback, with including Okoro and Aiden Hutchinson, those 2 edge rushers on the outside. The toughest test for Ohio State all year. It's going to be cold. It's going to be ugly weather. 29 degrees. Could maybe get, who knows, might see some snow flurries in this game. But this is what this rivalry is all about. We missed this game last year. And to get this game with not only the Big Ten championship game on the line, but a trip to maybe the playoff on the line. Because the winner of this game controls its destiny to get into the playoff. And Jim Harbaugh needs a signature win. I don't think he'll get fired for this game if they lose. But think about this if you're Michigan. You're 10-2, but your only 2 losses are to your rivals, Michigan State and Ohio State. How many more losses could Jim Harbaugh take against rivals before the heat is on? And the heat's on him today. This is the game Michigan needs to have. But can they contain Olave, Wilson, Smith, and Jigba? Just too many weapons on this Ohio State team. I think the Buckeyes find a way to win, but I think it comes down to the fourth quarter. And to me, when you look at the fourth quarter, Michigan has won some close games. They've also had the blown 13-point lead against Michigan State. I'm going to lean Ohio State. I think they win it by less than a touchdown, though. I think this game's going to be close. It's going to be competitive. I don't see the Buckeyes wiping the floor with this Michigan defense. Probably the best defense they've played all season long. Jim Leonard's defense, Wisconsin next week would be tough, but I think Michigan's probably the toughest they'll see. A game that I thought about including, of course, I thought about Wisconsin, Minnesota, Clemson, South Carolina. Clemson's ranked, but South Carolina's playing much better. We'll see if Clemson, with nothing really to play for outside of getting a 9-win season, how that plays out. Could be probably the last game for Coach O, Ed Orgeron at LSU. Even if LSU gets 6 wins, I don't think he can coach the bowl game. But can they send Coach O out in good fashion against Jimbo Fisher, former LSU coach or former LSU coordinator, as A&M heads to Baton Rouge? And I won't say – I don't think this game will be competitive, but there is an interesting storyline tonight in the farm. Notre Dame against Stanford. Stanford has 3 wins. One of them is against Oregon this year. And Notre Dame, if they win tonight, finishes 11-1, and then just waits to see if chaos happens around them to get into the playoff. I mentioned it on the show Thursday. I don't think Notre Dame is, as much as 11 wins is a fantastic accomplishment, I don't think they'll get into the playoff at 11-1 unless things break absolutely in their favor, just because they were victims of bad luck with their schedule not being as good as it looked going into the year. Playing Virginia Tech and USC and North Carolina looked a lot better, but they lost Cincinnati. Their best wins are Wisconsin and Purdue. They needed overtime to beat Florida State, who might or might not make a bowl game, which that's another good game today. The noon Eastern game on ESPN, Florida State, Florida, winner going to a bowl game, losers, season's over. But there's just not enough cachet on Notre Dame's schedule, as dominant as they've been. I mean, the last 3 games they've played, 34-6, 28-3, and 55-0. But they played Navy, Virginia without their starting quarterback, and Georgia Tech. Yes, they're doing their job and winning blowout games, but without that marquee win, Wisconsin, you look at that game being 41-13, a lot of that was defensive and special team scores that got the score that high. And as long as Cincinnati's undefeated, if Cincinnati beats Houston next week, there's not really a path for Notre Dame. I mean, if Cincinnati loses, if you go off head-to-head, Cincinnati's going to get it over Notre Dame because they beat them. So the Irish would need Georgia to win. They would need chaos in the Big 12. They would I think, need Wisconsin to beat Ohio State or Michigan in the Big Ten championship. And that's the best scenario. So a lot would have to break in Notre Dame's favor, but a win tonight, they can sit back and hope chaos goes in front. Notre Dame's favored by 20.5, but as I said, Stanford's 3-8. Game Notre Dame should roll, but you can't dismiss that Stanford beat Oregon earlier in the year. As bad as David Shaw's team has been, they have a chance to play spoiler tonight, even though they lost 6 in a row. But since the Oregon game, by the way. Still, crazy things happen in November. So coming up next, we'll wrap up the show with a little bit of each sport. We'll talk about the Mets Black Friday spending and what it means. We'll talk about last night's eventful college basketball game out in Vegas. Some of the good results that have happened in the last couple of days. And the big game Tuesday night in the NBA with Golden State and Phoenix. You'll listen to Kicking with Keeler on Full Press Radio. Wrap up episode 117 after the break. Last segment here of episode 117, our last show in November. So we're heading to the final month of the year, which creates for a lot of excitement, especially in all the sports, essentially. Except baseball, because we're likely heading to a lockout. We're going to get into that a little bit. But let's start with college basketball. And, of course, the big game last night in Vegas, Duke 84-81 win over Gonzaga. And this is the kind of game we mentioned this with, like, Villanova UCLA and Gonzaga UCLA. And I was listening to Dan Shulman and Jay Billis talk about the end of the game last night. These are the kind of games players want to play in. These are the kind of the games coaches want to coach in, because it's different from college football. One loss against a great team doesn't end your season. So you tend to learn a lot about your team in this kind of environment. And you got to give Duke a lot of credit. Forced 17 turnovers against Gonzaga, led to 23 points. Gonzaga only forced 8 turnovers, so Duke took much better care of the basketball. Drew Timmy had a lot of foul trouble in this game. That tend to hurt Gonzaga here. But you look at that great first half from Bancaro, who had 21 points for the game, but most of his damage was in the first half because he's dealing with issues with quads in the second half. But you look at Duke and finding ways to win, and the key in this game, what I noticed, was Mark Williams, the sophomore center. 17 points, 9 rebounds. He did a good job frustrating Timmy in the paint. You had Duke make their free throws toward the end. Wendell Moore Jr. with 20 points. Not the best game from Keels, but Duke did a good job at least hitting their shots, 46% from the floor. Gonzaga shot 53%, so they were hitting their shots, but outside of Strother and Bolton, they didn't hit a three-pointer. So that tended to hurt. Good game from Chet Holmgren, 16 points, 7 boards for the freshman. We said Gonzaga, it looked like it was going to be tough to beat them. And you look at last night, and it's tough to think these two teams aren't the best two in the country. Now, people out in Purdue are going to disagree and say, hey, Purdue should probably, and I think Purdue will either be one or two in the next poll this week before they play Florida State. Purdue, actually, if you look at their schedule, as of right now, does not play a ranked team until January 11th. But Purdue's playing dominant basketball right now, and that's all that matters. And they did, earlier this month, beat North Carolina and Villanova. So should be an interesting fight for Purdue. Now, the other interesting results from this week, or at least the last couple days, go out to Florida. Shout out to Iona for upsetting Alabama. That was a great win for the Gales. Just finding a way to win. Now, it was the great buzzer beater last night. Dayton upsetting Kansas, 74-73. The Mustafa Amzil buzzer beater against the Jayhawks. So Dayton making it to the championship game there. And the battle for Atlantis, that was a fun one. Baylor. Remember, we talked about them. They lost a lot of players from last year, yet they're 7-0. James Akinjo, 15 points, the leading scorer. Baylor winning against Michigan State, who had a good tournament out in Atlantis. They beat Connecticut. So Spartans, I think, are a team to reckon with going forward. Next, we go to the NBA. And the big matchup on Tuesday, Golden State and Phoenix. That's the one I think people are going to be focusing on. Phoenix has won 15 in a row. You look at their schedule. They did beat the Knicks by 21 last night. That was a good win for them. Devin Booker with 32 points. Suns, of course, after last night, their next opponent. They do play Brooklyn tonight, so that should be a lot of fun. And then the big matchup with the Warriors. And the Warriors, remember, these two teams are going to play on Christmas, so I think that's going to make this game much more fun. Phoenix is scoring at a high rate offensively. And Golden State right now, it's just tough to stop. Curry with 32 against the Blazers last night. A good moment. Klay Thompson was able to at least be there for his team. And that's a good thing with Klay Thompson back on the sideline, getting close to his return. Warriors had five players, all five stars in double figures, shot 54%. We talk about these games in the NBA where they're big but don't have a lot of meaning, but when you get 17-2 against 16-3, at least as of right now, and again, Phoenix plays Brooklyn today, so that could change. Easily the Suns could lose, and Golden State plays the Clippers. But regardless, these two teams are going to have, at worst, three or four losses. Makes for a fun matchup. Knicks-Nets on Tuesday, that should be fun on TNT. Wednesday night, not the greatest slate in the Wednesday games. And we have Sixers-Celtics, probably the best game on Wednesday. Hornets-Bucks, actually a good matchup for over 500 teams. Then Thursday, Bulls at the Knicks. And, yep, that's really the only big game on Thursday. So Golden State Phoenix, what you want to watch in the NBA. In terms of the match, Brooks Koepka dominates 4-3 over Bryson DeChambeau. I liked it. It was entertaining. It was interesting. And I kind of like the fact that the Nets, well, not the Nets, but the match in itself, I liked that it wasn't, you had the entertainment with Charles Barkley and Phil Mickelson. They did a good job in the commentary. I liked that it was just two golfers going at it, and two golfers that don't like each other. You had DeChambeau offering up Koepka cupcakes for the match. I thought it was really cool, but a very fun atmosphere, nevertheless, good times there. But the big story in baseball to wrap it up with is the Mets. Who spent over $123 million on three players on Friday. They signed Eduardo Escobar, an infielder who hit 28 homers to the Diamondbacks and Brewers last year, 2 years, $20 million. Then Mark Canha, they get from the A's, 2 years, $26.5 million. Both Escobar and Canha alone are good signings because they provide versatility. Escobar can play all around the infield. Canha can play first base. He can play a corner outfield position. But then the Mets strike big late Friday night with signing Starling Marte. 4 years, $78 million. And yes, Marte's 33 years old. Yes, it might be an overpay, but he's the best center fielder on the market. The Mets never really had a center fielder in recent years. It allows Brandon Nimmo to go to the corners, and it likely spells the end of Michael Conforto in Queens because Scott Boras is going to get him paid by another team. It's not going to be the Mets. So when you look at the Mets, and I was reading, I think Ken Rosenthal had the column in The Athletic, well, I like the strategy the Mets are going with in terms of trying to get pitching. And the way to convince pitching is to build up a defense. Get a defense that pitchers are going to want to come and play in Queens to have help them out, get free outs in the field. And adding Escobar helps. Adding Canha helps with that. And Marte is a good defensive center fielder and is one of those veteran leaders in the clubhouse that you want. So with all the criticism the Mets have taken, they don't have a manager yet. Steve Cohen got ripped last week for handling the Steven Matz situation. But it shows you he's doling out the money. And if you get out the money, fans are going to be happy with it if you spend it right. Now, we'll see if that means Javi Baez is not coming back to the Mets. There was talks, I know John Morosi said on Friday, Detroit could be in the mix there. Boston could be in the mix. I think there's another team in on Baez. And the big thing with baseball is you've got to get these signings in by this weekend if you want them done by Wednesday. Wednesday, remember, if there's no agreement, there's going to be no agreement. There's a lockout in the sport, and the sport basically freezes for who knows how long. Which means when the lockout's lifted, you're going to get this whole flurry of free agent activity because outside of what happened with the Mets yesterday, there hasn't really been a big splurge of free agents. I mean, the last big mini-splurge was the Syndergaard-Verlander news. But the Mets have put themselves in a tough division where at least you're spending and see where it goes. It's hard to blame them, though, for spending that kind of money. So Want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. Remind you can tweet me on Twitter at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader, like a Terminator 3-5s. Follow us on Twitter at FPNR_coverage at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Give it your podcast. Just search Kicking with Keyword. Chances are you will find it. You can also, please feel free to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It is free. All of our articles, podcasts, live shows are there. Be sure to check that out. Remember, if you have any questions, comments, you can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. Always happy to hear from you. You can catch me on FBC NFL Sunday this weekend with Ian Glendon, the founder of the website, Kyle Senra and Brayton Holacek, previewing Week 12 in the NFL. Also, be sure to check out my team's work at Pinstripe Prospects, covering the Yankees minor league system, and my work at Barrett Sports Media. New articles up every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Hope you all enjoyed your Thanksgiving. Thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, on a Saturday morning. Enjoy the college football today. Enjoy the NFL this Sunday, and I'll see you back here next week. Look at the Dallas Saints. Look at the Pac-12 Championship as we get into December. Until then, enjoy the weekend, everybody.